Yeah, thank you for inviting me. My name is Sheldon Thomas, one of the advisors to the Home Office on Gangs Across Europe, across the UK, sorry, where we go into different local authorities and look at their gang strategy as a whole. So what I mean by that is what the local authorities are doing to tackle gang violence within their local areas. So I'd leave from here, maybe go to Bradford, have a look at Bradford Council's gang strategy. Have they got one? Have they not got one? And why haven't they got one? And how can we help them to get one in place so that they can deal with the gang's problem in their area? So I do that for the Home Office as well. I also run my own organisation called Gangs Line, which was set up in 2007. And Gangs Line was set up because there was several murders that happened in one weekend in London. London isn't the only place where gangs are, so I'd just like you to know that now. Birmingham has a serious gangs problem, so does Nottingham, Sheffield, Leeds, Manchester, and parts of Wales have a gangs problem as well. So it isn't just exclusive to London, and I know some people like to make you believe that London has got a big gangs problem, but actually Manchester has even a worse gangs problem, and so does Liverpool. So we're talking about gangs across the UK. There are gangs in Scotland as well. Scotland has a serious problem with heroin addiction. They are most probably the highest users for heroin in the whole world, in the Western Hemisphere. Again, because it's in the UK, people tend to not talk about Scotland as much, and they tend to talk about America or South America. But the facts are the biggest users for heroin is in Scotland, and we have a problem in Scotland. So throughout the whole of UK, we have a drugs, gangs, guns and knife problem. So I just want you to know the backdrop to that. Why am I here? I'm a former gang member. I started my first gang in 1976. I was 12 years old. The reason why I started at that time was a completely different reason to why many young men start today. We was dealing with racism. And what I mean by racism, to be clear, we were being targeted by police officers and the National Front. For those who don't know what the National Front is, it's part of the British National Party back in the 70s, or Combat 18, or loosely from the Teddy Boys era. So we were verbally and physically abused by police officers. We were called many names like Coon, Sambo, Jungle Bunny, Go Back and Swing in the Trees, by police officers on a daily basis. And obviously, after a while, being a human being, there's only so much pressure one young child could take from police officers consistently calling us those names. And at the same time, we were attacked by guys who were most probably 19, 20, in steel-toe cap boots from the National Front. So we was getting it on both fronts. Then when we went back home into our houses, our parents didn't understand what we was going through and wanted us to ignore what was being said to us or being attacked. They didn't take our sides, in other words. So it meant many young black men, like myself, my age group, I'm talking about the 60s and 70s, felt alone. We felt that we had no alternative but to form gangs to protect ourselves, because we wasn't getting the love or respect at home, and we were certainly not getting that out on the streets in Britain. So gangs for us in the 60s and 70s was started as a response, a social response, to the abuse we were getting from racist police officers and the National Front and Teddy Boys at that time. What happened was that where we are today, it spiraled out of control. Many of us were getting locked up because, as you know, beating up a police officer is an arrestable offence. So many of us were getting locked up and felt that we wasn't winning. We felt our voices was not being heard. So most of us turned to criminality. In other words, we started selling drugs. We started carrying guns. We thought, to put it into some context, We thought the only way we could get Britain back for slavery and colonialism and for the way they're treating us as black young men was to commit crimes in their country. That's what we felt at the time. So that's to put it in some context of where we are today, how gangs in some neighbourhoods started. I'm not saying gangs is exclusive to young black men. It is not. If you go to Liverpool, Croxteth, Norris Green, Salford, all the gangs are white. They're not black. They're white gangs. The difference between the gangs up north and the gangs down south, most gangs up north are generational. That means the mum's involved, the dad's involved, the granddad's involved, the uncle involved. You will find when you go to the white underclass areas in Norris Green, Croxteth, Toxteth, Salford, those areas, we're talking generation upon generation of criminality, of crime, inbred in society, in those particular societies. So that's the kind of difference between the white underclass up north and young black men down south, here, where we are. And obviously, I've been witness to several murders, I've been involved in several serious incidents. The last incident was a young man got his head blown off next to me and all the blood came on me and there was a big hole in his head. And I think that was the point I felt that God was saying, what road you're going to take? Are you going to continue down the road of self-destruction, or are you going to take the road of salvation, or the road of moving and changing your lifestyle? And I feel that when those four gunmen came in, that could have been me, because the young man was standing right next to me, less than 3-4 inches away from me. His head got completely blown off. So for me, that was my precipice, that was my turning point. I was then very fortunate to meet a young man. Well, he wasn't young. He was an MP. His name was Bernie Grant. And he took me to America to meet another young man, and not a young man, a well-known man called Jesse Jackson, who was a Christian. And it was at that meeting point that I really began to realise that we were all put here for a purpose. Up until then, I felt lonely, emotionally wrecked, lost, confused, because we wasn't getting the love at home from my mum and dad. I wasn't getting love from society because they were saying that I'm black and I'm not a nice person. So it wasn't until when I met Jesse Jackson that he began to let me understand that there was a God, that there is a God. We knew there was a God, but we thought that I don't know, for better or for worse, many of us thought that God, some of us thought that God was punishing us, some of us thought that God wasn't for us, and then there were some of us who thought, well, you know, God's not doing anything for us at this moment in time. So we had a kind of mixed views. But it wasn't until when I met him and he explained to me what God did for them in America in the civil rights movement. And it was at that point I began to realise that not all white people are racist, which is what I thought at that time, and not all black people are nice. And it was at that point that he began to really show me that that's what God was showing him, that in order for the civil rights movement to move forward, you have to take a God perspective. And so he began to show me that in order for me to move forward, I have to take a God perspective, rather than a perspective of what my environment was telling me, which was, you're black and you're a nigger, or you're a coon, or you're a Sambo, and my mum just saying, just put up with it. So it was until that point that I began to realise, obviously, God had a plan for me and a purpose. So that's the backdrop of how I got involved. So when I came back from America, I began to work with gangs in the UK. That's the backdrop of my little story. That's just so that you can get a context of why I'm here. Now, we're dealing with conflict and the Christian advances of conflict. And so some of what I say is going to be very controversial. But what I want to say is this. I'm not saying that every Christian isn't doing. When I put this presentation together, I don't want everybody to think that I'm saying Christians are not doing anything. That's not what I'm saying. And I don't want people to think that I'm speaking about all single mothers in a negative way. That's not what I'm saying. I am talking within the situation of local communities. And so throughout this, you will hear me referencing to Christians are not doing enough, but I'm not saying every Christian. I'm referencing that a majority of us as Christians are not focusing on what Jesus has called us to do, which to me is the community. So I'll get on with the presentation because I know time is of essence. As you can see, the challenges are quite severe. Street gangs and gang violence, drug use and drug distribution, female sexual exploitation within gangs, grooming of children. Young men aged 10 are now selling drugs on behalf of these older guys in our communities, in every one of your communities, maybe not in every area, maybe not in Devon, maybe not in Cornwall, but in certain most deprived areas, you will have young men selling drugs on behalf of older people. And as a church, we have to address that. Street gangs and gang violence, we're going to talk about that later on, and drugs violence. Whilst I'm not suggesting all young people are involved in this lifestyle, because they're not, what I am suggesting is that the minority of young people that is involved in this lifestyle influence the majority of young people. And what I mean by that, so I can break that down a little bit more, if we have an estate in any area, let's just say Liverpool for all intents and purposes, and we have an estate, and on that state, we have 300 gangs or 300 individual gang members. And we have about 500, 600, maybe 900 young people not involved in the gangs. Those 600, 900 young people will be, for all intents and purposes, will be in fear of those gang members, will be intimidated by those gang members. And what will happen is, even though they're not involved, they will then find weapons to take with them to keep themselves safe. Because most parents do not understand the life of a child in today's inner city estates. And most churches don't as well. And these young people will take a knife, not because they want to use it on somebody, but because they don't want to join the gangs. They take it to protect themselves, so when the gang comes to try and get them or recruit them, they can defend themselves. This is what young people are saying. This is what gang members have told me. This is what non-gang members have told me. So a majority of the knife incidents are not all gang-related, but indirectly they are, because the person took the knife because they're scared of what the gangs will do to them if they don't join them. We need to think about that. So that's some context around it. And as you can see, that was from Croxteth. When I went to Croxteth to talk to the gangs in Croxteth, that picture came from there. And the reason why I took that picture is just to show you this is not just a black problem. It's to show some context around it, that we have a serious problem in the UK. And as church people, as church leaders, what exactly are we doing about it in terms of how are we challenging what these young people are up to? I'm going to show a video and just so that you can hear how these guys feel. How do I look here? There. This is a video I made some time ago.
It's just crying. It's a bat, it's everywhere.
There's no safety anywhere really in London.
Yo, every day someone's getting mashed up or shot or something.
I feel neglected, you know, raised in Tottenham. You know, like, things aren't easy right now.
If you can stab someone, obviously you must have some sort of bollocks, like you got some balls in you. So by the drawing of someone's blood in war, it's like, yeah, you're down now. It's almost like you're bloody when people are fucked something or whatnot. That's your blood in you. You've done it. You know what I'm saying? You're authentic. You're not just talking, you're walking as well. That government, what they got going on is rubbish. They're not here to help us. The only thing they've gave to help the black youth of today yet is prison. It's the only thing they've gave.
So you don't want to be socially excluded, you want to fit in where you're from. And if where you're from is hell, then you're going to turn into the devil to fit in. And I think that's what a lot of people don't seem to understand.
Like, me personally, nobody's going to help me but me. No mayor or MP or prime minister, nobody, they can't help me.
I personally feel like with the knife crime and stuff like that, if they really want to prevent it, like the living standards of certain people, especially estates like this, they need to make it better. So people feel like they're not living in hell and they don't need to become devils and they don't, everything is not materialistic. They say the devil wears Prada, you know, and all my friends are in Prada. It's a cool thing to be in, you know what I mean? So it's like, that's what it's all about here.
You can have myself with drugs nowadays, you know. You're freaking 14-year-olds, you know, 13-year-olds are selling drugs, like, so that's what it's, drugs and knives and guns, really.
And it becomes a fashion, like, to have a mobile phone. You have your knife, you've got your mobile, you've got your weed, you know? And I know it's not acceptable, I know it's not the right thing to do, and everybody knows it's not the right thing to do, but because they feel they belong, and they feel it's a place where they have a certain identity, and all those people condone it and people accept them for it, even if their family excludes them, they find a new family, and their family's the street.
God to put it, it's just something like, it's just a no-no, innit? It's just something you don't do, innit? And it's like, the way we've been brought up, innit? No, it's bad, but that's how it is for us, innit? And I doubt it's going to change for a very long time, innit?
Look, all young males at the moment, it's all about pride. And if you can fit into that, like, circle, that pride, like a lion has its pride, you feel comfortable, you feel like you belong to something.
And we all want to achieve things. Some of us want to be mechanics, sportsmen, musicians, you know, we all got dreams. No one wants to get shot up for the rest of their life.
I personally feel my school is shit because we was told it was shit. We was always told that statistically this is one of the worst schools in London. And I look around and it's full of black kids. So I'm thinking, fuck, I'm fucked.
As you can see, there were certain points in that video that hasn't changed from my days in the 70s to where they are today. If you look at what he said, there is no safety in London. That young man is about 24 years old, and he's saying to us, he does not feel safe. The question is, who has the authority about how young people should feel? In other words, how are young people meant to feel safe? Is that the role of the parent, role of the police, or the role of the church? Now, this is where I would come in with my research that I've done. I don't believe it's the role of the police. I believe it's the role of the parent, and I believe it's the role of the church. Because I think that when we first came to this country, the church and the community were more interactive. When I came here in the 60s and 50s, what has happened over decades, two or three decades, the church has fallen away from the community, and the community doesn't see the church as part of the community anymore. If you go to places like Liverpool, when I went to Croxteth, this is what they told me. These are white kids, not black kids. They don't want to know nothing about the church. That is not the view that I had when I came to this country, when my parents came here in the 60s. That was not the view. Everybody went to church. But what's happened is the white underclass have lost faith in the church totally. So what's happened is the Anglican, the Church of England, the Pentecostal, Evangelical, call it what you like, they have no faith in none of those. That's the white working class, that's the white underclass, which is the main fabric of this country. If you look at the black kids, what's happened, in that same period of time, they have fallen away from the church. So the Pentecostal evangelical churches that held the community together in the 50s, 60s, when we came here, are no longer holding anyone because they have become insular. So the message of Jesus Christ, which is what we, when we came here, which is what we prided ourselves on, which is the community, which is showing the love of the church to the community, is completely being decimated. So when you have a young person saying they don't feel safe, they're speaking to us. They're saying, you have failed us. We don't feel safe. I have no father figure, and we're going to talk about fathers later on. Let's have a look at something Kelsey said. Every day somebody is getting mash-up. Mash-up is a terminology from the streets used, in other words, stabbed or shot. That's the word he uses, mash-up. So when I say the word mash-up, I'm talking about somebody is being stabbed or shot every day. That's his world. See, we walk about in our world, but their world is a parallel world that walks alongside ours. And in their parallel world, every day somebody's being shot or stabbed. So if you can understand how he's seen it, he's now become desensitized to violence. Because every day somebody's being stabbed or shot. And the people that have the spiritual authority over those particular areas are not really involved in it because we've moved away. The spiritual authority is we're praying and interceding on behalf of our community to keep it safe. We're not doing that. Let's have a look at what he said here. I'm feeling neglected. Those are the same feelings I had in 1976. He has the same feelings now. What does he mean by he feels neglected? Well, he hasn't got a father. I had a father. But there was no love coming from my household to me as a young person from my mum and dad. So what he's saying is he feels neglected. So he then looks out the window and sees the gang member and feels that that's where he's going to get the love from. Remember what I'm talking about here. We're not just talking about black kids here. You can go to Croxif. This is the same thing that you'll hear. If you go to Scotland, these are exactly the same words you will hear. Let's have a look at the other thing he talked about. You don't want to be socially excluded. Listen to what he's saying. He doesn't want to be excluded from his estate. Remember, we spoke earlier about young men not wanting to join the gangs but taking up a knife. Basically, what he's saying, you either fit in or the chances are you'll be killed for not fitting in. Can you imagine you growing up in an environment where if you don't fit into the gang, you either will be killed or you join the gang? That's what it's like in certain areas of England. Brixton, Croxteth in Liverpool, Toxteth in Liverpool, parts of Glasgow. That's what it's like. So I just want you to look at that and just kind of think that through and ask ourselves individually, as a church, what can we do, what should we be doing, and why are we not doing it? Let's have a look at gang mentality, because we tend to not look at this too much. This is what a gang really looks like. This would be me when I was younger. Most gang members are suffering from emotional trauma. What do I mean by emotional trauma? Most gang members growing up in a house where there's no father figure, or if there is a man in the house, generally what happens is the man's beating up on the woman. So he then grows up seeing domestic violence from the age of 5, 4 and upwards. So in his head, that's how you treat a woman. Rejection, we spoke about that. Loneliness. People think when they see groups of guys together, these gang members with their hoodies or whatever, oh, they can't be lonely. They are. We were lonely because we had no one to speak to. See, where the church ran the youth clubs back in the old days, there's no youth clubs. There's no youth clubs and church doors are shut. So there is no togetherness that where a young man could come in and go into a church and do youth stuff. That's how it was for me when I grew up. When I grew up in the 60s, we walked into a church and that was the youth club. I was in a Methodist church. That's what we found. The church no longer provides that service because we've gone insular. We're more interested in how much people are attending our flock rather than what are we doing to serve our community. Anger. The same anger I have had, the same anger these guys have got. Anger can drive you to do some many crazy things. And one of the things that we have to understand is, who's got the authority of dealing with anger? Well, I don't believe that that is the police problem. I'm sorry, I don't. I believe that's a home problem and a church problem. Because we've got the spiritual and moral authority to pray against that. And we have to try to help these young people by doing those kind of stuff. People used to, a lot of people in the old days, they went to confessions and all of that kind of stuff. Now, whether we agree with it or not, or we don't agree with it, we're all supposed to be Christians anyway. The point is, who's dealing with the anger? The hatred. We've got young men who hate each other. Fear, confusion, disappointment, disillusionment, insecurity, personality disorder. Personality disorder. We're going to talk about that later. These are the effects of what we spoke about from the previous slide. These are the effects of it. Violence, criminality, drug distribution, kidnap, torture, rape. Rape is a major problem. Last year alone, these are actual figures, these are not made up figures, there were over 6,000 gang rapes. Gang rapes. Remember, these are the figures that are reported. The ones that are not reported are far more. Because young women do not trust no one anymore. They don't trust the church, they don't trust their parents, they don't trust no one, so they don't tell anyone. And most of the girls don't even believe they've been raped. Because of the videos they watch, they actually believe this is what life is like. They actually believe that, you know, a guy should ill-treat you because that's what it shows in the videos. They actually believe that they shouldn't wear hardly any clothes because that's what it shows in the videos. And because they haven't got any father figures, and the mum is no different to them because the mum had them when they were young, and the mum was a child or a teenager when she had the first child, her mum is in no way be able to raise another child because she was a child herself. So, now we're going to look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And the reason why I've done this, and I know this is not really a Christian an approach, but it's one that we can look at and maybe think through. So we're going to look at four steps at the moment. Now, when we get a young person, most services, this is how they operate, they're expecting a gang member or a young person who comes from a real bad background to start achieving. But what most services don't understand is that a young person cannot achieve if their basic needs have never been met. That's the reason why today we have 37-year-old gang members still on the streets at 37 because their mind is like a 15-year-old. Because what people don't understand is that you can't fix this with interventions, you can only fix this spiritually. It can't be fixed with intervention. I can't say to Bob, don't carry a knife, and he's going to stop. Something has to click in Bob's head and click in his heart for that to happen. It cannot happen any other way. That's the reason why I'm saying the church has the authority on this matter. So if, and this is Maslow's hierarchy of needs, he's not even a Christian, and he understood that you cannot expect a young person who's coming from such a bad background to really his life be a success up here when these three things here has never been met in his life. I mean, we hear on the news every day, somebody's always saying, how can we have 30-year-olds sit still on the streets doing this, doing that? Because their needs, their actual basic, they've never been loved. They have never been told. To this day, I haven't been told my dad loves me. And if I wasn't become a Christian, how would I have coped? The simple word love can overcome many obstacles. But many of these young people will never hear that. They won't feel the affection of a family, because the affection of a family is made up of gang members who themselves are warped in their thinking. So these are the reasons why I'm using the Maslow's hierarchy, to let you see that unless these needs are met, when that child becomes 25, 30, 35, won't make a difference. He will still, or she will still, think they're still 15, they're on the streets. And we won't even bother talking about the rest of that because they won't grow. Right now we've got young men aged 30, 37, 40 years old, and they're still acting like they're 15 years old on the streets. Safety needs have not been met, basic needs have not been met, and we expect our children to suddenly mature overnight. For this part, I'm going to put my glasses on, because now we're going to touch on some statistics. I hope I'm not rushing. Well, I am. As you can see, these are gang statistics. Now, these are government figures, but they're I'm going to give you the government figures only because the real figures are far more worse. Where they say there's 71% of gangs are from the black community, it's far more than that. Where they say 50% are from African communities, it's a little bit more than that. So you can see the social element has changed. In the 60s and 70s, 71% of gangs in London were West Indian. Completely, totally West Indian. Maybe the odd young white working class kid was involved, but not that many. Now, if you look at the African kids, it's the dynamics have changed. Now, 50% of gangs are African. What does that mean? We're going to go into that later. Look at the countries they're from. Every one of those countries in the last 10, 15 years have suffered some form of civil unrest. We're going to go into that. Have a look at this figure here. 69% are from Christian households. We claim to have the gospel of Jesus Christ, but yet 69% of gang members actually come from Christian households, where the parent is a practicing Christian. And the reason why is because we haven't really found or grasped the real message of Jesus Christ, which starts in the home before you attend church. 61% of black families have no fathers. 20% of white families have no fathers. We're in crisis. The society as a whole is in crisis, but yet the church has never these figures are figures that the church can deal with because it's a moral issue. These are moral issues, and we've got the spiritual and the moral authority. The government doesn't have that. All the government can do is build new housing. But build new housing and the person's heart and mind ain't changed, makes no difference. But we, as Christians, have the spiritual and moral authority, can change the heart and mind of man that will put them into a new housing, and it will stay like a new housing. So these are just little figures that I've brought here. These are all figures from government. If I gave you the true figures, it's a lot more worse than what it really is, but I'm going to give you the government one. Okay. This was done. This is a recent report commissioned by the mental health needs It was a tri-borough public health report produced on behalf of the Westminster Joint Health and Wellbeing Board. Now, these are true figures. They took a sample of 100 gang members. Now, we know how big the borough of Westminster is. It's quite a big borough. So they took 100. This is what they found. in the 100 gang members they spoke to and did a research on, 86% of them had personality disorders. 67% of them suffered from alcohol dependency. 59% of them suffered from anxiety disorder. And 57% of them suffered from drug dependency. That was just 100. Can you imagine if they did 1,000? What would those figures be like? These are our young children. These are supposed to be the guys and women that are going to run the society when we're long gone. And this is the state of them now. Look at these figures. 34 of them have attempted suicide. These are gang members that are supposed to be hard nuts. These are gang members that carry guns and knives around. These are gang members that sell drugs to anyone. But yet 34 of them attempted suicide. 25 of them showed signs of psychosis. 20 of them suffered from depression. That was just a sample of 100. Let's have a look at some emerging trends. Grooming initiation, child exploitation, female exploitation, witchcraft. Let me tell you why I put the witchcraft. If you remember the other slide previously, when we spoke about 50% of the gangs are from Africa. Now, before anybody thinks I'm stereotyping, I'm not. These are real. This is real. Whether we want to play political talk and not offend our neighbour, not be rude, these are facts. And the facts are, we have gangs in London, Birmingham, Manchester, Liverpool who use witchcraft to intimidate other gangs. Why? Because 50% of them are from Africa. Congo, Rwanda, Uganda. And regardless of what our thoughts are, being politically correct or not, as Christians, we know that is a problem. That's a major problem. When young kids are practicing and using witchcraft to intimidate other gang members, we have a problem. Troubled families, we all know about troubled families. When we talk about troubled families, we're talking about white underclass, young black and ethnic groups who are on low income, who have single parents, who live in disadvantaged areas, who come from broken estates or are riddled with gangs. So I'm not talking about a mum that is working and she's single. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about real trouble here. So those are the new emerging trends. So let's have a look at... Right, we're going to look at a video, which this one does work. Okay.
Well, he's talking. I just want to back up what Sheldon's been saying. A member of the local pastor's prayer meeting, I am.
Brilliant. That's right. Sorry about that.
Growing up in the ends was kind of easy for me. Having an older brother made it easy for me to get along with the local boys.
I was in the gang, you see,
We were the young Jews, YGs, you know, young gangsters.
What's that? You said, them and them, yeah? I don't want none of them taking your stuff. You're a big man now, yeah? You do your thing. Yeah, you know?
I felt untouchable with the elders around.
Man, I feel up there, yeah? Do your thing. You must say, man, cool, yeah? Yeah, man. We're on today,
bro. They were watching over me and gave me confidence. And on top of that, it made me popular.
My YG is gonna be a gallery.
Bro, but you have to be easy, my brother. Look, no violation, man. Look after it. Yeah. Furthermore, hey, you, man. Hey, young G, come.
Zach. Hey, Zach. He says, cool, yeah? Listen, yeah, Zach, my little brother, innit?
Yeah.
I don't want no one to fall with that shit. Any problem around here, come to me. Get me, yeah? Look after him, I'll look after you. Everyone's cool, yeah?
Yeah?
I say nothing. Okay, cool.
I like trolling with my brother.
So the question is, how long will it take them to groom us? Children as young as 10 are being groomed. That's what's that number.
Now, as you can see in that video, there were certain keywords they use. And this could be any one of us. We look out the window and we see a bunch of kids playing. They don't look threatening. Gang members don't look like how they used to look. They don't wear the do-rags. They don't wear their pants sagging no more. They're learning to be smart. So what they do, they appear non-threatening. So if a parent looks out of the window and they see about three or four older guys just sitting on the wall and they see little kids playing, they don't think nothing of it. But what they don't understand, these guys are subtly grooming young children. So what they do, that these gang members are smart, they look out and they think, okay, let's have a look to see who's got a father figure. Well, as you know, most of these guys on these estates don't have any fathers. So that's not going to be hard to work out. Next one they look at, who looks the part that they can easily manipulate, coerce, and trap into that lifestyle. So what they do, they say to Bob, oh, Bob, your trainers don't look good. So, you know, I'll buy you a pair of trainers. So they buy the young guy a pair of trainers, knowing the mum can't afford it because the mum doesn't work. The mum's got issues of her own. And so they buy him £100 trainers. And they're like, whoa. So now he's got the trainers. Then the next say to him, oh, Bob, you know what? Them clothes you've got on ain't saying nothing. Come, let me go and put you some clothes on. So they buy him some clothes. This is what gang members do. They're smart. And so what happens is, that young kid doesn't know he's been bought. He doesn't know that. He thinks this is love. Remember what we spoke about earlier, when I spoke about not understanding, not getting love from my father. So you don't understand what love is. You're not sure what love is because you've never had it before, you've never experienced it before. So now you think, oh, this guy must love me because he's buying me this stuff. Now, here comes the part, what happens. He then says, yo fam, drop this thing over to me. So the young kid's like, what thing? Like, I'm not dropping that. What? I've just bought you them trainers. I've just bought you this and bruv. So now the kid realizes for the first time that he was manipulated. Now he may not know the word manipulation, but he knows something's happened. So he then takes it over, and then that takes over, and then it continues. And before you know it, that kid who's 10, 11 years old is earning 20, 30, 40 pounds a day, 50. Think of it what I'm saying. The parent has no job. She may have two or three kids for two different men. He's now bringing in 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, maybe £100 a day. Now, the mum is not going to turn him over to the police because it's her son. Secondly, she has got no money going on, so she thinks, well, you know what? I'll take half of what you earn. Because in her head, she ain't got no job. She can't get a job. She's not educated. She's got no qualification. She's never worked. So she's going to take half the money. So that's how that's how it works in their world. That's how it works. Our children are being manipulated, coerced by these guys. And they're not doing it in a way that seems threatening. They do it in a non-threatening way. What are we doing to overcome that? We're going to talk about that. I decided to break down witchcraft just a little bit more so that you can get an understanding. Obviously, you do your own research. These are some of the stuff. This is why they do it, to intimidate, fear, and cause control. And this is how they do it, using black magic, reptiles, coloured jewellery, and facial distortion. You need to look into that. This is what we're up against spiritually. These are the things that we have a spiritual eye ground on that the government doesn't have. You know, the government can talk about witchcraft all they like, but if you can't talk your way out of this one. This has got to be broken in the spirit realm to do that. So this is witchcraft. That's what it looks like, and that's the reason why they do it. The reason why I did this one, I wanted you to see what I'm talking about in a more realistic sense. And as you can see, these grey areas represent the different gangs in Hackney. As you can see, there's a lot of gangs in Hackney. There's most probably more than that. This is an old one. This is over 10 years old. So there's more gangs in Hackney. But this is what I've done. I want you to see what it's like for a young person living in, and each one of those areas, there are churches. In each one of those areas where the grey spots are. So we've got Church of England, and we've got Pentecostal churches in those areas. So let's have a look at what it's like for a 15-year-old or 12-year-old in that area. So let's have a look at Holly Street, and let's have a look at London Fields. Not too far apart. Yeah, so if a mum asks Bob, I need you to go to the shop for me, Bob's now thinking, if I go to the shop, that's London Fields territory. What's going to happen to me? So he then says to his mum, I'm not going. Mum doesn't understand because she doesn't understand gangs. She took no interest in what her son's doing. All she wants is the money that he makes. So he said, I'm not going. She doesn't understand why he's not going. Because the fact is, to come out of Olive Street, you could be killed. That's what it's like for these guys. They're trapped. They're trapped in an environment that they've brought on themselves, but we have allowed to continue because we haven't stepped in on the spiritual and the moral high ground. We haven't challenged fathers who don't look after their children. We haven't challenged society about the moral breakdown of society. We've become less concerned about the moral fibres of what's going on and more concerned about what we're doing as Christians amongst ourselves. Now, is that every Christian? No, that's not. But a majority of us is not doing enough. That's what it's like all over London, Birmingham, Scotland, Manchester. Makes no difference who we're talking about, whether you're talking about black kids or white working class kids. It makes no difference. That is their life. We, on the other hand, who may live in Hackney, we can walk freely anywhere because it doesn't bother us. But children under the age of 18 or under the age of 21 have a problem. They can't walk about so freely in their own area. So let's have a look at what we can do. This is a spiritual battle. Some of you may believe in it, some of you may not, but I'm just going to say it anyway. So these are the spiritual battles, and this is the outcome. Abandonment causes fear. Bitterness causes anger, murder, and violence. These are all the spiritual. Spiritual spirits causes postcode. That's what we looked at just now. Rebellion causes self-will. That means I do what I want, when I want, and no one can't tell me what to do. That's their world. Strife, fighting, and violence. So there's a spirit attached to everything these young people do. That's the reason why I was saying that we have the spiritual governance and the moral eye ground to tackle this problem through prayer and intercession, and also supporting organisations like ours who are actually on the ground fighting this physically, in so to speak. Let's have a look at mental illness. That's a spirit. Look what it causes: paranoia and schizophrenia. Most of our kids go through that because they smoke skunk. Skunk is chemically made. It's chemically made. And every time they smoke skunk, it damages one brain cell. Self-deception. They are deceiving themselves. I deceived myself. I thought I was something that I was not. Sexual impurity. We have more gang rapes now than ever. There was a saying when we first came to this country, and I'm going to tell you what the saying was, and some of you may not like this. Rape, we used to say, was a white man's thing. I don't know if you heard any of that before. Black people used to say only white people rape. If you didn't know that before, those are facts. When we first came here from 1948, We never raped anyone because we used to look at rape that white people do. There's been more rapes caused by black people now than ever before. That is because they're watching videos that promote sexual explicit lyrics that promote violence. We have videos right now that are shown on YouTube that actually promote violence, that actually promote degrading women, that actually do it. The occult, we spoke about that, witchcraft and juju, that's what they call it. Africans, the young gang members, don't use the word witchcraft, they use the word juju. So that's the battle, the spiritual battle. How do we deal with that spiritual battle? How do we do that? This is what I believe as Christians that we should be doing. Evangelism, we've lost that. We don't even go on the estates anymore. When I first came here, Christians would be knocking at the door every single week. Are you a Christian? If not, do you know the message of Jesus Christ? That was big when I first came to this country. We don't even do it. We don't even do it. We don't even go out on the estates. Intercessory prayer, that doesn't happen in churches. We don't have enough churches praying against the spirit of violence, the spirit of young people deceiving themselves, the spirit of young people being drawn into this lifestyle. We don't have that. We don't have the prayer that is saying that we're coming against the spirit of unemployment. 50% of our young children are unemployed. That's an awful lot. Yet we've never even prayed against it. And the small churches that do pray against it, it's not enough. We all should be doing it. Training churches. This is where I come in. I've wrote to every single churches that I know of, about 200, asking them to let me come in and train their youth pastors, their youth groups, to understand gangs. None of them respond. I wrote to the Church of England, I wrote to the Methodist Church, I wrote to everybody. Because I believe the only way we can understand how to get to grips with the problem we have on the streets is if we understood it. Cell groups, create employment and support, reintegration into education and challenge the music industry. That's what I think we can do. I think we've got the spiritual authority and the moral authority to do these things. And this is the biggest problem. Challenge absent fathers. We've got the moral high ground to do that. We can actually go on TV and challenge absent fathers. We can do that. That won't be stepping on anybody's toes. That's the moral high ground. The government can't do that. And I think these are one of the estates that I go on. These are just give you an idea of the estates that I go on so you can kind of get an idea. These are run-down deprived estates. Literally 70% of everybody on that estate is unemployed. Most probably haven't worked for years. Generation upon generation. So I think this ends my presentation. Those are my details at the end. I hope I didn't offend anyone, because I'm just trying to get the picture out to you guys to say, look, this is the reality, and I don't know any other way of doing that without saying what I have to say. It's not meant to offend. I'm not attacking single families. I'm not doing that at all. I'm saying that there's a moral breakdown in our society. And if we don't attack moral breakdown, we're not going to change a thing. And I believe in my heart that we as Christians are the only ones that can attack the moral breakdown. We are wrong to blame the government. We're wrong to blame the police. We, as the church, are the ones with families that can deal with this problem. So that's the end of my presentation.